So this morning we read this really wonderful piece called Those Who Greatly Realize Delusion Are Buddhas, Guidance in Zazen. And let me just first read the beginning two paragraphs of this. No matter how hard we practice, our motivation for practice is always based in some amount of self-centeredness. The act of truly seeing this self-centeredness is itself Buddha. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. To realize delusion, is to be a Buddha. Awakening to the incompleteness of our practice and returning to our path is the meaning of repentance, of atonement. So part of what I love about this piece, and part of what the invitation this here is to reclaim the term delusion. And the term delusion is not a value-laden, critical assessment of your bad mind, which should be replaced with a better mind that only has enlightenment in it. Delusion is the actual name for the stuff that arises in your mind. All of our mind, always, in all circumstances. And this is not a problem. Being present to, receiving, entrusting ourselves to the arising of all of these things which are only ever delusions. This is the practice of Buddha. This is the practice of the universe. This is the practice of entrusting ourselves to this awakening which is not ours, not about the content of our mind, not about being good enough or smart enough, or quick enough, or clear enough. Those who greatly realize delusions are Buddha. Well, what a relief this is. What a relief that we don't have to be trying to be not deluded. That we don't have to be trying to have some other experience. That instead, in our practice, we can just go, arising of stories. Grasping. Pushing away. This is realizing delusion. No matter how hard we practice, our motivation for practice is always based in some amount of self-centeredness. So we always come to practice for a reason. Some reason. And here's the thing, that's not a problem. But whatever we're coming here to get, we're not going to get that. There's nothing to be gotten. And so, and this is why it's important to recognize that although clarity and calmness and centeredness and spaciousness and compassion or whatever it is, all of these things may arise, or not, but they may arise. But they are not what we're doing. They are not what we're aiming at. They're not what we're going for. All of those things are byproducts, secondary effects to the real work of showing up to sit in the midst of our delusions, which is a wonderful thing, sitting in the midst of our delusions. And this is a really reliable practice. We can count on that. Sitting in the midst of brilliant dharmic clarity, right, that's something we can nail for maybe 2 seconds at a time once every 3 years. But being present to the arising of our self-centeredness, being present to the arising of our delusion, and letting that be included in the sphere of just the universe universing, which later in this piece, Shohaku Okumura uses the term Genjo Koan, which is Dogen's term, for the actualization of reality. That's all that's here. is the actualization of reality, manifesting reality, the universe universing, the universe us together, universe using, or the universe us delusions together, universe us delusioning. How wonderful. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. Delusion. And there's an invitation here to not make whatever we struggle with, whatever stories, whatever reactivity, whatever humanness we have, to not make that into bad and wrong and other, but to welcome it and sit with it as our old friend. Our old friend. Stories about what I want out of zazen. My old friend wanting to be calmer. My old friend, agitated mind. Welcome. Right now we're sitting and manifesting reality. Sometimes I even say, welcome, my old friend, the demon of wanting to be different. This naming, this inviting in and naming these demons and befriending them. In my Doksan room over there, there's a painting of a demon doing zazen. It's on my side of the cushion, I want you to all know. This is the only practice I do, sitting there with my demons, sitting there inclusive of my demons. In zazen, we let go of our narrow, limited karmic selves. And narrow, limited karmic selves, this is anything that arises or is because of stuff that we do, think, or give rise to. Anything arrived at through your doing, or through the causes and conditions that have led to your circumstances, that have brought you specifically from the moment of your specific birth and extending backwards to beginningless time to this particular moment. That is the karmic self. In zazen, we let go of our narrow, limited karmic self and become one with the total interpenetrating whole that is absolute reality. Now, become one is not the right language. I could have caught that when I was editing this book for Shohag, but become one sounds like it's a thing. Okay, I'm not one, I need to become one. All right, am I one yet? Is this one? How's this? Becoming one, it's not a thing. We actualize and affirm and entrust ourselves to the truth and the fact of the matter that right now we, and for always and forever, there's only ever been this one. And this isn't a thing that we feel. I feel totally one with everything. That's not what we're going for. Feelings of total oneness with everything, man, might arise, but so what? I mean, that's not a special thing. That's just one of the many things that arise in your mind. Sometimes you feel really agitated. Sometimes you really want a chocolate milkshake. Sometimes you feel one with everything, man. Those are all exactly the same. In zazen, we let go of our narrow, limited karmic selves and entrust ourselves to the fact that we are and have always been one with the total interpenetrating whole that is absolute reality. Absolute reality, us delusion. And also this letting go of narrow, limited karmic self, that's also not a thing. It's not a thing. Okay, I gotta let go of my narrow, limited karma self. Let go of that karma. All right, no more karma. No more karma. No whammy. Game shows from the 70s. Thank you. we let go of our narrow, limited karmic self. And part of what this means is we recognize that whatever we're, that there is nothing our narrow, limited karmic self, there's nothing in the sphere of control of that little thing that we're trying to make happen. There's nothing, it's not our narrow, limited karmic self that we convert into a big, spacious, gigantic, universal self. It's recognizing, okay, so this part is the narrow, limited karmic self, and we're sitting with all of this. The narrow, limited karmic self is like a current in the great ocean of the universe. And rather than identifying with just that current, you know, which you can't even pick up and say, if you had a great ocean with a current, you couldn't say, okay, here's the current. You only have the ocean. But it's recognizing that there is this current, it's going on, and there's this ocean, which is not the same as that current, not separate from. And that current in the ocean has never been separate with from the ocean. It doesn't have to be one with the ocean. One is the only way it can be. We can never see this absolute reality as an object of our discriminating minds, but we are naturally a part of it. We cannot be an observer of absolute reality because we ourselves are part of its total movement. So, again, this relieves us from the burden of trying whatever we're trying to do, whatever we're trying, okay, I'm going to see absolute reality. All right, all I see is regular reality. I'm really going to look for absolute reality. Completely unnecessary. Because this inclusiveness of absolute reality is never capturable by content of thought. It's never capturable by any experience of body and mind. And so again, if we are in this great world ocean, sitting in the bottom doing our zazen, looking for the ocean, and then we take a bottle there in the, you know, we've got our scuba helmet on. We take a bottle and we scoop up the piece of the ocean right in front of us, and there we are under the ocean with a bottle, and inside that bottle is some more ocean, and we say, right here is absolute reality. Right here is the ocean. We've got the ocean in this bottle. It doesn't matter which bottle you're using or how big the bottle is. You're never going to have the ocean in the bottle. You'll have some water. The ocean includes all of it. So it's not about trying to get the right mind. It's not about trying to get the right experience. One of our other sutras says, the vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. You're welcome to spin around, but that doesn't affect your relation to the vast, inconceivable source. It's always there, always inclusive. And so Zazen is entrusting ourselves to this absolute universal reality. And even entrusting ourselves is too much. This is why one teacher, Rev Anderson, who we also have a recitation by, talks about the ceremony of Zazen. Zazen isn't a tool. It isn't an instrument to get something for us. We do Zazen, but it's the ceremony of doing it, the ceremony of just sitting and meeting the universe. This is because the vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. We can't be any more one with it than we are. And when we're angry and we're confused, seeing, angry and confused is what's here. this is itself Buddha. And what a relief. What a relief. All of this points to it's not about you. It's not in the category of can be done right or wrong, can be done well or poorly. It's just this. It's just Genjo Koan. It's just reality actualizing itself in this moment of being time. Even amid delusion, we are still living within absolute universal reality. And even though we are living within absolute reality, absolute universal reality, we are still deluded as limited karmic selves. This is the reality of human life. So even though we are living within absolute universal reality, even though that's true, we are still deluded as limited karmic selves. The greatest and most harmful and most pernicious misunderstanding or unseen through delusion is the delusion that somehow we're no longer deluded as limited karmic selves. Anybody who tells you they're no longer deluded as a limited karmic self, run. Dogen somewhere says, I am almost not confused by self, which I really love. That's a bar that I can aim at. We don't have to be not confused by self. Almost not confused. This is the reality of human life. This is our life. This is what being a human feels like. Being a human feels like being a human. It's not. We are living within this absolute universal reality. That is true, that is functioning, that is happening, and we can entrust ourselves to it. But never does our limited karmic self become it. And also, our limited karmic self doesn't need to be fixed. We don't need to have better karmic self. We don't need to have differently limited. This is the reality of human life. This is us. This is what it is to be human. And as a full human, fully human, we sit down in the ceremony of Zazen and entrust ourselves to this already oneness of absolute universal reality. In Zazen, it is not the I, the limited karmic self, that awakens to reality. It is the reality of the universe that is itself practicing and manifesting reality. It is the reality of the universe that is itself practicing and manifesting reality. Great realization actualizes great realization through our practice. And important not to hear that as later. If you practice well, then great realization will actualize great realization through your practice. Great realization is always and inevitably actualized through our practice. It's not the I, the limited karmic self, that awakens to reality. And again, those who greatly realize delusions are Buddhas. Those who greatly realize that all that arises for us is the functioning of the limited karmic self are Buddhas. Awakening to our limitations, awakening to the truth of our karma, is itself Buddha. the end of this piece points to an additional direction. Practicing in this way helps us understand that our map of the world, any story we tell ourselves about the world, is biased and incomplete. And understanding, and this understanding allows us to be flexible. Practicing in this way broadens our view, and this broadened view allows us to be better at working in harmony with others. So, thus far in this talk, I've been emphasizing Zazen is not a thing. It's not a special. It's not a state that we're going for. And there's nothing that we need to bring or have or experience other than this limited karmic self amid absolute universal reality. Not a thing. And not nothing. Not nothing. Not dispensable. Because the act of doing the ceremony of Zazen and sitting down with the demons of ourselves and entrusting ourselves to absolute universal reality, this helps us see that any of the stories we're telling about the world are just stories we're telling about the world. And that lets us meet the world and the people in it and the people we care about and the people we encounter and the circumstances and challenges we face. It helps us meet that more flexibly. We're still and always limited karmic selves. But what we can start to be is not so much on blind karmic autopilot. Blind karmic autopilot of reactivity. Something happens, we react, and we're caught up in it, and there's no choicefulness. There's no moment of reflection, no moment of being able to ask ourselves, okay, so this is the circumstance that is arising. These are the feelings that are arising in me. In this moment, who do I mean to be? In this moment, what is useful? What's skillful? What's kind? In this moment, what does it mean to be guided by the Bodhisattva vows? In this moment, what does it mean to be guided by the precepts? This is being flexible. This is having our reactions. Reactivity never stops happening. But reactivity doesn't automatically bring reactive response. Reactivity happens, and those who greatly realize reactivity are Buddhas, and we're able to say, okay, got this reactivity going on. What is the best that I can do in this moment? Being flexible. Being flexible with holding our wants and desires more spaciously, not making them into requirements for ourselves or the universe or other ones in it. Being flexible. Practicing in this way helps us see that any map of the world is biased and incomplete. Practicing in this way broadens our view, and this broadened view allows us to be better at working in harmony with others. We can be... and it's important not to make this better at working in harmony with others into something that we should be, therefore. We should be some kind of saintly being who's always in harmony with everybody all the time. Better means, you know, a little better. A little more space. And it does, and a little better at working in harmony doesn't mean no conflict. And it doesn't mean run away from conflict, and it doesn't mean roll over and, you know, just give up in the face of any conflict. It means meeting that conflict just with a little more harmony, a little more space. in Zazen, there's no way we can judge ourselves. Although, of course, we obviously can judge ourselves. We can judge the hell out of ourselves. We're very good at that. But what we can't do is ever have an accurate judgment of ourselves, is ever judge ourselves in a way that is anything other than just the arising of a judgment, another one of those bottles in the bottom of the ocean. In Zazen, there's no way we can judge ourselves accurately because we cannot step outside our mental formations into true reality. True reality is this world-sized ocean and ourselves and all that arises. And we never can capture that in any size bottle. And we never can be apart from that. But anywhere we look, it is the ocean, but it's not all of the ocean. True reality is always beyond such judgments. There is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or being enlightened. And again, accurately, there no conception of being a Buddha or being enlightened captures it. And so it's not about trading in a wrong conception of being a Buddha and being enlightened for a better conception of being a Buddha and being enlightened. No conception captures us. It captures it or us. Yet without trying to be a Buddha and without trying to become enlightened, in Zazen, we keep settling more and more deeply into a measurable reality. And outside of Zazen, we keep settling more and more deeply into that immeasurable reality. In Zazen, we settle more and more deeply into absolute universal reality. And outside of Zazen, we bring that into the relative and specific reality, which is also not separate from absolute universal reality. So I really love this piece. So one other thing that I want to put in a word for moderation. So this is talking about Zazen, and we do Zazen every time we come to the center here. But Zazen is not the be-all and end-all. And it is in no way whatsoever the case that more Zazen is better than less Zazen. Some amount of Zazen is necessary and essential. And some amount of Zazen is essential for you to be able to get a first-hand experience of understanding what it is that we're talking about whenever we talk about any of this. But important for you to discern for yourself how much Zazen is valuable to you. And not also, if you answer that question, not to imagine that is an answer now and for all time. That's just right now, just today. So give yourself space to meet yourself. Also not dispensable is Sangha. So even if you sit no Zazen whatsoever at home, come and be with the Sangha. So, thank you, everybody. I want to now open it up for comments or questions or resonances or complaints.
Things like compassion, expect to become more compassionate, that may be a side effect. And that, we don't sit to sort of fix or change the kind of karmic self we are. Don't we, though, once we decide to sit, once we come and sit, whatever brought us here, don't we then start making different, just that, we've already made a different choice.
Right. Right.
Which changes, or certainly affects, going forward, the kind of self we are.
That's right.
And continue to be.
That's right. And you are pointing to the it's not nothing aspect of this. But we can come to Zazen trying to be more compassionate. And if we're doing that, that's really going to not work. But the place that compassion comes, for me, is realizing, God, I am an asshole so much of the time. And seeing that enables me to be less of an asshole. You know, enables me to be able to include, to be more flexibly kind to the humans I meet and to myself. And so the arising of my obnoxious nature isn't a problem to be fixed, but seeing that then gives me the option of not acting from that to the same degree.
For me, my whole idea of compassion has changed from something I need to do to something that just is.
Mm.
Just like gravity.
Yeah.
Is compassion.
Yeah. Compassion is part of the fabric of the universe. Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Absolutely right, even though I hadn't, you know, known that she was waving and intentionally not waved back, she was right on another level. I shared her aversion. She has an aversion for me, too. But I was part of it. And so when I left this family place, my husband said, should we go and say goodbye to her? So I said, yes, we should. And I took my father and my husband over, and I said goodbye, and I hugged her, and I stepped out of the way, and the others said goodbye, and I left. Now, I didn't feel kindly. I didn't feel, oh, yes, she's just like me, even though we may have a very similar personality. I don't know. I didn't feel any of those things, but I did consciously feel that I could not choose to continue to trap this person in this way, that I could set her free from me, from my mind that was trapping her, by simply doing what is normally courteous and most people would do anyway. I could just do that. And I didn't think about it I didn't think I'm going to make this choice. I just, I think it is from doing zazen that right choice appears sometimes and you can just do it. And it doesn't have to do with what we normally think of as kindness, courteousness, compassion, or anything else. I'm not sure what it is, but we can just do that and we can stop.
And this is what we point to, this is what our koans point to. Each time we have to present just the simple reality of hi. That is an actualization of the vast, inconceivable reality. And you are also pointing to the same thing that Mike is pointing to, which is also this capacity for flexibility and space that arises out of doing this thing, which is not a thing. This quality of both and part of what Zazen does is it enlarges our capacity to hold these paradoxical truths, to be able to hold and make space for this, and simultaneously not this, in any of its myriad ways. And I think I heard you say, realizing that I am my delusive self?
Right, or that, you know, if anything, that is what is going to lead to what I think are better side effects, like compassion, or just sort of the practice of being those things instead of
being
the delusive self.
Yeah. So there's a difference between being those things and making space for it and discerning the arising and presence of those things. So we can get into a little bit of trouble if we say I am my delusive self, because then we're defining our fixed essence as delusion. And delusion may be continually and always present, but not as a fixed essence. And so to also leave space for being absolute universal reality as well. So delusive self is present, but it isn't exactly mine, and it isn't exactly me. And there's also a release that comes from kind of giving up ownership and identification with that. Then it's not like personal. And you're pointing to the essential kind of spaciousness that comes from honoring the reality of all of our wantings and strivings, and in honoring that, and in doing that, we actually can move, become more flexible, broad-viewed, and compassionate by not by trying to be more compassionate. Thank you. Yeah, Rebecca.
Are you ever worried that someone who's listening to a message like this might actually have like a very, like some kind of behavior that's abusive towards others. And maybe they think, just as long as, you know, that's my abuse of self, I don't want to change it, this is in self-help. It's all part of the ocean. Is there like any kind of...
Right, so that's super important. And this is why I emphasize the precepts and the bodhisattva vows. So we only practice this in those contexts. And causing harm to others is not the same as not causing harm from others. And Buddhism is very clear that from the beginning you should cease from harm. And this is also a subtler message than yeah, whatever, it's all good. You know, and this is what you're pointing to actually is the samurai perversion of Zen in Japan. You know, there's no life and death, it's all just absolute universal reality, so I'm gonna go ahead and chop off your head. Right? That's no longer Zen. This is the way the samurai used the teachings of Zen, used the practices of meditation to become better warriors, and in doing that, it's no longer Buddhism. So, ethical conduct and being held to account for ethical conduct is of utmost importance. And we have, in Boundless Ways Zen, we have a really beautiful and inspiring code of ethics. It's on the website and you should read it. And it's actually been kind of taken as a model in a number of sanghas outside Boundless Ways Zen. And to be, and so I'm a member of the Soto Zen Buddhist Association of America, and to be a member of that, you have to be abiding by these ethical codes, by ethical codes, and you have to be in a center that abides by ethical codes and holds you accountable to them. So all of this is really important, and this is also why we do the precepts as recitations, and why we have monthly study groups discussing the precepts and helping ourselves to be more in alignment with them and reflecting on how we can bring those into our lives. They're starting, this year's cycle is starting in September. So if you take a piece out of context, it can be that. And anyone who is saying it's okay if I abuse you because this is just me being one with my delusions, that's just complete 100% garbage. That has nothing to do with this. Because it always has to be in the service of the three pure precepts: ceasing from harm, doing good, and actualizing good for others. And everything we do takes place in that context. And that language does bring in that there is harm and non-harm, there is good and bad. So there's in some countries where Buddhism is prevalent, there's not language for I am a Buddhist, but there is language for to have taken refuge, to have committed yourself to following these essential and not at all dispensable guidelines of the precepts. And Zen that doesn't acknowledge the fact that the precepts, the bodhisattva vows, and ethical conduct and being of service to the world, that without that, it's dangerous in that way. So come to our precepts discussion group. Book Chukai.
So, sort of the same problem, but let's take it out of the realm of harm, and just something more ordinary. We say that Zazen is not a tool, and we're not trying to accomplish a specific state of mind or attain something.
On the one hand.
Right. But on the other hand, there's also, you know, we are coming here and doing a specific thing, and we are doing it for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to point to something that Shuhaku says earlier here. He says that Zazen enables us to see clearly that we are part of the world. So there is this seeing, and it seems to me that this is the important thing, that yes, we, you know, we're always our limited karmic selves, but
right.
but what a wonderful thing to actually sit in the middle of that and see how it is that we are, and that just that seeing is so important. But it's because when you say the word ceremony to me, it says, oh well, that's just a ceremony. You know, we're not actually, you know, we're not.
I didn't
we're
say
not,
just a ceremony.
Well, I know, but that's what comes up for me is that that's just a ceremony.
Yeah. So a couple of things. There's you're reading from the first half of this piece, which is excellent and important, and not the half I was talking about. But thank you for pointing that out. So. Yes, this seeing is hugely important, and this seeing is part of what this desire for the seeing is part of what forms our motivation for zazen. But all our motivation for practice is always based in some amount of self-centeredness. But it doesn't mean. But that is wholesome motivation. But even wholesome motivation is based in some amount of self-centeredness. And recognizing that even wholesome motivation is based on some amount of self-centeredness, and also recognizing that wholesome motivation is crucial and essential and completely worth having, and please have it, is it too? And you also said, so the seeing is really it, and sometimes you don't see it. And if seeing were the entirety of it, that would mean that you lose and dishonorable discharge from the Dharma and whatever. So, so even that, thank you everybody, even that seeing, which, though valuable and perspective granting and lovely, even that is byproduct. It's useful, but it's not, we can't, but if that seeing is based on a state of mind, a content of consciousness, it's unreliable. But it doesn't mean that it's not useful. And again, this is the place where the image that I use is that seeing that you're part of the universe, part of the world, part of Buddha. That's like when the waves of a ocean or a pond become still, and then you can see down into the bottom. and then you know something deep and true about the bottom. And then there's times when the wind kicks up again and there's white roiling waves and you can't see down to the bottom. But because you have clarified and seen for yourself, even though you can't see it now, you know it's there, that bottom, and you're able to entrust yourself to it. And this is why the entrusting is more reliable than the seeing. And the value of the seeing is that it supports our entrusting for when we can't see. Excellent points, though. Thank you.
I think the self-centeredness is interesting, but it's that is so high, it's highlighted in this, in the fact that it's very much that, like, this is the concept of the self being so important, bring yourself to the cushion. Even the self-centeredness is something that you can practice because it sits on it as you sit here. Whatever
right.
It is that brought you to this little black square in this room, to think about, because if it's the self-centeredness, your method, or if you're, whatever you're running from your own life of fears that you're trying to approach, the thing you're trying to grasp for, the piece you're trying to find, or this magic other thing in which you're right now, whatever it is that brought you to sit there, great. Sit with that too as it comes up.
Yeah.
Yes. This is the opportunity, at least from my experience, has been the opportunity to sort of sit with all of those things that come up, the fears of life. This is all the thoughts, the random things that come up. And in that space that you get to understand what it is to be in this life, what ends up happening as a natural outflow will naturally outflow compassion, not compassion, anger, whatever it is, not anger. But you have an opportunity to approach your life in that moment. And it's been, for me, a very amazing experience to be able to see what it is to be this human being.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I started by saying part of what this does is reclaims for us delusion as not a negative thing. And you're pointing to reclaiming self-centeredness as not a negative thing. And that this is part of the reality of human life. And this is why we don't have to have some kind of perfect motivation free from self-centeredness. We can do it exactly as you're saying, with this human motivation that's mixed between self-centeredness and care for others and all of that, but meeting that is what we're doing. Yeah, sitting, and this is also why we don't aim to be cut off from our limited karmic self. We have to bring this limited karmic self to sit. It's the only way sitting gets done. Yeah, right. So what a relief that we don't have to try to do that. But so often that is kind of a secret agenda that we might have, is trying not to be this person we are.
I just wanted to share that, many times when we read these Zen sayings and stuff, I always feel like I'm reading like a modern physicist's writing, because that sounds totally ridiculous, but if anyone's familiar with modern physics thought,
David Bohm, is that who you're thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of like uncertainty principle. You know, and as you know, in physics, as soon as, and this is what's amazing to me, is that this, scientists use this as the nature of the universe, so it's not something that is abstracted. It is the nature of things. As soon as you try to isolate something's position, you can't know its velocity anymore or something like that. So in the same way, as soon as you discern yourself, then you're cut off. Or as soon as you, for me, as soon as I discern what I have to do and change by myself, the anxiety arises, and as soon as I stop doing that, it's not there anymore. And I just see this constant discerning quality that we have, that it talks about it in the writing. Just trying to discern absolute cannot be. And as soon as you think you have it, you're not going to.
Right.
And for me, I just kind of always laugh at like these writers, even really ancient ones, really forward thinking.
Right. And we see it in mystical religions of all sorts. We see it, I mean, the culture is very excited about seeing it in neuroscience these days. But the thing is, the thing about the Dharma is that, you know, unlike revealed religions, it's not true because it's the Dharma. It's not true because Buddha said so. It's the Dharma because it's true. It's the Dharma because it's what's actually there when you look. And it doesn't matter what tools you use to look. It doesn't matter what discipline you use to look. But it's the Dharma because it's true. And I also appreciate your commenting that that you have to laugh. And I think having that, seeing the humor of this beautifully elegant system indicates you're in the right place. One of my teachers says that if it doesn't at least sometimes make you laugh, it's not the Dharma. Thank you, everyone.